Okay, welcome everybody. We're going to talk about a little ebook that T. Harv Eker put out there, Master Your Inner World to Succeed in the Outer World. Amen. Sounds great, right? So get ready for a little more in-depth kind of conversation with self today, and hopefully you'll learn something and grow from this process. We're actually taping this as I talk on a cruise. We're on a marketing cruise this week, and we won't get back in time because this is Sunday. I'm going to be in the boat all the way through next Saturday, so we don't want to miss giving you a Monday call. So we're taping this, and we hope you all enjoy it. So let's jump in. T. Harv Eker, and the topic again: Master Your Inner World to Succeed in the Outer World. So as we know, key to success lies directly with us. I mean, we sometimes look outside and we go, oh, it's so-and-so's fault, or it's this, or it's the company's fault, or it's the other person's fault. We always want to put blame and we want to put focus on other things outside of us. And the reason we do that is it's called self-protection. We want to look at ourselves as being totally, you know, out of the formula if failure occurs, and in the formula when success occurs. But that's not the truth of the matter. Because our key to success, the keys to success truly lie within all of us. So, and one of the big points we need to look at in terms of our lives is how you do anything is how you do everything. And that has a lot more to do with integrity, being integrous with self than anything else. Because it's about, I don't want to be a different person when I go here versus over here versus over here. How do I show up in each and every endeavor in my life? I want to show up at my full capacity. I want to be the best of what I can be in everything I do. So when I start slacking, when I start giving up a little bit of piece of that, when I start settling for something less than that, for me, it's compromise, and it's I'm out of integrity with self. So that's why when Harvey Eckert says this, he's really, this is a principle in self-development, and it's just a universal truth. That, you know, when we start giving up and we start slacking and we start sacrificing in one area of our life, it will soon seep into other areas and eventually take over. So we want to make sure that whatever our core values are and what's really critical, important to us, and how we operate and how our expectations of how our life's going to work out, that we take that directional in each and every aspect of our life. We don't pick and choose when we need to show up and when we don't. We're either showing up big or we're not, and it's going to cross all the boundaries of how we operate in all areas of our life. And, you know, Harvey Eker just said the same thing about the book, Can't Master Your Inner World to Succeed in the Outer World. What you get out of the book is exactly what you put into it, and that's true too. In other words, whenever you're reading a book, and I think I've passed this on to all of you over the years many, many times, I actually have a one-page book review form that I give to people when I recommend a book to them, because what it does is it starts and stops after each chapter. It's like after every chapter of a book, I want you to sit down and I want to say, what were the most critical points that you learned in that first chapter of the book? And so you write those down, 1, 2, 3, and then the second question becomes one of, and how will it change your life? And I know that sounds pretty dramatic, but the idea is that if it's really a critical point that you've learned, then how and what application will it have in your life to help you be different or do things differently as you look forward on your life? That's what makes a book a great book for you. That's what makes points in the book critically important for you, is that you chew on them, you work through them in your head, thinking about what do they mean for me, and you come to some realization, and it's only tapping into that and really digging that you're going to find a conclusion there that can totally impact your life. So good books are great, but if you just read and put them down and all you can say about them, it was a good book, then I'm going to suggest to you it wasn't that great a book. It was more of another movie for you, right, instead of a book that could really make an impact on your life and change your life. So let's talk about, he talked about the mystic path, and I don't really get into mysticism, so I hope none of you are ever offended by that terminology. I'm just using T. Harv Eker's, his terminology. He said, most people do not live the way they do because they like it. And here I am, I just told you we're on a cruise, and I can tell you when I walk around this cruise, I see a lot of people living lives of quiet desperation. And it saddens my heart. And it really tells me that there are a lot of people that never really, if you sat down with them, they'd say, this isn't what I dreamt my life would ever turn out to be. And it's a problem. And so they're really fighting themselves in living a life of enjoyment and fulfillment, which is really the dream that we all have as we're little kids. We want to grow up and whatever that is to us, whatever we decide our values and goals and set all that structure for ourselves, we want to live that fulfilled life. So what causes people to not live the way they do, right? Because they like, what is it? Rather, they do not know what else to do. That's what, it's almost like they're stuck. A lot of people, if you ask them, why do they live that way? They're not going to be able to answer you that question. They're going to either blame it on outside circumstances. Something happened to me. This is how I was raised, blah, blah, blah. Everybody will typically have some excuse for their life. But it's really, the truth is that we haven't found an enlightened path in our life. We haven't pursued it because something has stopped us. And that's what his book talks about, is about what is that that's stopping us. And it's obviously it's us ourselves, but how do we tackle that? And he calls it the mystic path. He says it gives us a hint that there is another path that we could live on. That's the mystic path. Anyone who wants it badly enough will find it. In other words, if you strive after it and you don't give up and you don't let challenges stop you and you don't let what other people think get in your way and you don't let programs develop in your life that sell yourself short, then guess what? You will find it. You will find that path of fulfillment. You'll find that path of total joy and fulfillment and enlightenment that's out there for each and every one of us. And when that happens, when you're standing in that, and you're living that, everything alters itself dramatically. It's like he compared it in the book to, it's like a river, you know, we're on this river and in the winter it's frozen and it's just flat and it doesn't have any personality whatsoever. It's kind of deadened. Well, hitting the mystic path is like when the spring comes and it thaws and the river starts stirring and it becomes rich with life. And that's what he compared it to. And I think it's a great comparison. Transition is not always smooth as a part of you is already transitioned and not bothered by the external disruption that may follow. So we look at that and we look at, you know, when we choose to make changes, and some people probably on this call as well are sitting back going, Mary Jo, I hate the word change. And I have people in my life that will tell me that, so I know that they exist. And I don't really understand it. I mean, I understand that people can choose that, and it comes from a deep-seated fear. It comes from something restricted, and we're going to talk about where that was developed and why that's in your life. But the reality is that we should be embracing change. We should thrive on change. We should thrive on moving forward in our life and learning and growing and becoming, is, you know, being in that growth mode as much as possible. I mean, some of the people that I love hanging around with the most are people that really love to read a lot of books and go to seminars. And it doesn't matter if they're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. None of that matters. It's all about a continuous growth mode. You know, I look at myself as always green and growing. I don't ever want to stop learning more, because one of my main reasons is that I also want to pour into new knowledge and new ideas and new concepts and help other people grow as well. And I can't do that if I sit back and stagnate. So when you go through growth periods, the transition isn't always smooth, because sometimes we have to acknowledge how stuck we were. And I know I look at myself in self-development arenas where I had to evaluate myself and say, you know what, this isn't a problem. And I remember going to a self-development seminar where the people that, I was in a feedback arc, and we had to get up and give a story about ourselves or something. And people came back and gave me feedback that they didn't believe me. They didn't trust what I said. And it broke my heart. It ate me alive. It was like, oh my gosh, it was horrible. I felt terrible. I thought I was telling 100% truth and they didn't believe me. So, but then I ended up talking to the facilitator a little bit, and she said, you know, Mary Jo, it's not about that it wasn't truth. It's about how you tell your stories, or how are you coming across? How can you be a better communicator to allow people to truly believe what you're saying? It was one of the greatest awakenings in my life. something that was that painful. And isn't it something how we talk about the, sometimes the greatest pains in our life are what really lead us forward to grow and be better? Well, this was a classic case of that. It was that painful experience that allowed me to open my eyes to see something I didn't know existed. So how powerful was that? But transitions, whenever we transition, you know, it's not always smooth. So, you know, there's going to be some disruptions that occur in our life, and especially with people around us as well. So as we shift and as we change, there will be disruptions. So the underlying question is for all of you is, you know, do you want to be happier? Do you want to be, you know, in search of what he calls the mystic path? I'll just call it the, a route to greater understanding, greater knowledge, greater self, you know, understanding and self actualization of who you are and the greatness within you. If you want to pursue that route and achieve that level of happiness and have more inner peace and inner power and more fun, then as Harv suggests, this is the path you want to go on. This is, you're exactly in the right place, right? DR. So let's talk about the power of presence. It's critical in order to step into our true essence is being able to stay present. And that's very difficult sometimes for us. A lot of people love to live in their past. They keep talking about stories because they want to stay happy and they find that their happiness is grounded in certain happy events that happened in their past. So instead of dealing with reality, they love to go back and look at the go back in life and pull those out. And that's because that's where they're finding their joy. But the importance here is that we need to stay in our presence, right? We need to stay, who are we right now? What's going on in our lives right now? And Harv Eker, he just said, basically, it's unfortunately most people don't love themselves. And when he made the saying, you can't give what you don't got, you know, if you don't love yourself, you're going to have a heck of a time trying to love other people. And I believe that love is at the core beingness of what we're to receive and what we're to give and what we're to be on this planet. So we need to start looking at what is stopping us from loving ourselves. And that's going to start bringing up some deep stuff that some of us don't like to work on. But it, again, to have a self-actualization, to come to that real concept of finding it, you know, that calm and that joy and that inner peace, and bring it to your current world, it's important for us to do that. We have to hammer on some of those things, and it's a lot about self-forgiveness as well, because it's not about you beating up on yourself, it's about letting go. Today's the first, I love that saying, that today's the first day of the rest of my life. So what can I do from this day forward? I can't change the past, I can only change today and the future. So again, if you want to be happier, have more inner peace and inner power and more fun in your life, this is the path. The power of presence. Critical to step in your true essence is being able to stay present and staying present with yourself. We talked a little bit about that we want to be present with ourselves today. Today's the first day of the rest of your life. And we talked about people not loving themselves enough, you know. But when you feel fantastic about yourself, there's an energy that is within you. And that same energy is transmitted outside of you to everyone and everything. So think about it from that perspective. You're going to have a major impact on somebody else. If you feel badly, you're going to be transmitting that to people around you. It's very difficult to hide your true feelings and your true emotions in the moment. And I think this is one of the reasons some people don't go out and, you know, share with other people. You have this phenomenal breakthrough technology and glycobiology or whatever it is that you have that you're going to share, an opportunity for people. And you don't do it because you go, well, I wasn't feeling very good that day. I was kind of depressed, so I didn't want to go out and share that. Well, there's some validity to that. But wouldn't it be better if we could handle the depression in a way such that we could move forward? And that's exactly what Harv Eker is talking about in this book. He's talking about how do we tackle that. So it's about getting the energy there and getting ourselves into a posture of feeling fantastic about yourself. And that doesn't mean that you're feeling fantastic about everything you've done in your life. Always remember, today's the first day of the rest of your life. So we can just choose to be feeling fantastic. Choose it. We know this by experience, being around people with magnetic personalities. You want to be around them. You want to buy from them. That becomes the attractor. It's a magnetic field that almost exists because you know, And I've had some people say that about me. Sometimes they'll go, Mary Jo, I want whatever you're on. And I start laughing like I'm on some kind of drug or something. I go, well, I'll just tell you, I choose to be happy. I choose to be delightful around people. I choose to interact with people in a pleasant way. And, you know, and a lot of mine comes from my spiritual walk as well, of course. But, you know, it's there's no magic potion out there, people. The magic potion lies within you to make that same choice and that transition from where you are to where perhaps you truly are committed to being. So, but that's what you like. And it's effective in our industry, because obviously in our industry, when you're out there marketing, anytime you're marketing people, if you have a magnetic personality, if you carry joy in your life, more people are going to want to be around you. Even if they're not joyful, they're going to be around you because it's an attraction to them. They're going to want to be able to either look at you and learn how to be more joyful, or be around you because you make them feel better about themselves. And that's what you want to do. And even on this marketing cruise I'm on right now, you know, I interact with lots of people because I really have a lot of joy meeting new people I've never met before. And, you know, it's delightful for me to find ways where I can contribute in their life when I see things that are going on, and how can I contribute in their life? Because I'm there for one reason. I believe I'm there to make a difference in other people's lives and not to sit in a chair and just be a hermit. So it's just great to go out and meet people, and that's what generates relationships and generates contacts. And of course, that's what I'm doing on this cruise and what I love to do in my day in and day out life. You've got to become the type of person you've always wanted to be. That's one of the quotes out of his book. And it's just, what is it that you want to be? What are you choosing? What are you choosing? And most of us have a high standard for that. And we work on becoming that person. Number four, locating the source of happiness. Eckhart said in his book, he talked about visiting his elderly mother and feeling sad about when she was going to, you know, he knew that she was in her final days and feeling sad about when she would depart. And he recognized going through that experience that he wanted no regrets when he leaves this planet. So he really looked, he said, what am I leaving that's going to be undone? I mean, what's our list? You know, and a lot of people talk about that list that we make to go out, our bucket list, you know, things we ask, and that's kind of activities we'd like to do, but there should be a bucket list for undone things. Are there wounds in relationships that you wanted to heal? What are things that you really want to do differently in your life, or you want to make a difference in before you exit this earth? Because you really want to leave the planet with no regrets. And, you know, for some of you in your 20s, this, you have plenty of years, perhaps. Of course, we never know how much time we truly have. But I prefer trying to go each day with that concept, and not trying but doing, the concept of don't leave things undone. Don't leave anyone questioning. Don't leave somebody, you know, don't leave a relationship broken. You know, how can I, you know, support this and moving this relationship forward? I don't want any sadness in my life because of something I may have said or done or interaction that I had that I left open. I don't want like that on a daily basis. When you start taking that kind of approach in your life, it'll change your life. Because I'm going to say any unfinished business out there, whether it's brokenness caused by you or somebody else, it'll eat you up. It's like poison in your system. It's like carrying unforgiveness, you know, all of that. So it's important that we look at that, not just, although Harv Eker talked about it when he leaves the earth, I'm talking about it on a daily basis. We can make better choices around that, and that will free us up to truly show the love and the connection and the joy that we have within us. Living life to its fullest so your priorities are set straight. If we're to do that in a real way versus superficial way, we have to work on the source of happiness and success. And where is the source of happiness and success? Exactly where I've talked already about it being. It's inside of you. And that's what we need to do, is work on us, right? And making sure when we work on us, that'll help you set your priorities straight in life. It starts with you. Each of us has a life philosophy, and most looks like, you know, this is an important thing. I've done this triangle diagram for people in trainings historically and self-development classes. But most of us, each of us has a life philosophy. Most of us look like this. if I have all this stuff, I can do all this stuff, and then I can be the better person, right? I have to be type analysis that we have. And the problem, when I have this, I'll be happy. Most people are looking for a feeling. They're looking for, you know, I want to create this feeling, but I have to have this. What are the steps I need to get there to have this feeling? And people truly enlightened, people that truly understand the reality of who we are and where the source of life exists and happiness exists, understand that it's the exact opposite of that. We choose our beingness first. Don't require outside forces in some way, shape, or form to bring you happiness and joy in life, because now you're dependent on a whim, on a wish, on events, on happenings, on facts. You choose happiness up front. You get up in the morning and you go, thank you for giving me another day. And I will be glad and be joyful in it every day. And that joy that you have and the happiness you have coming out of that sleep will just drive you the rest of the day. So your beingness will then cause you to do things, because we know when we're joyful, we do a lot more. We get a lot more done. It's more fun to get things done. We're more active. Our hormones are exhilarated. We create many things. And then from the doingness is where we achieve things. I mean, that's why I tell my group all the time. I said, you go out there and you share, you know, the opportunity you have or the products that you have, and you do that every single day for at least one person, you're going to see incredible change in your organization and your income level. But we need to do it. And people go, well, Rachel, I wasn't in the mood. Well, there we go again. If you're going to wait till the mood comes upon you, good luck. My goodness gracious. It's a choice. We're at choice. And that's a big thing. A lot of people will argue that point. When I teach this, sometimes I'll get some people really in my face. Well, you haven't had the life I have, Mary Jo, and blah, 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 blah. And I go, oh my gosh. We all have stories. I mean, my brother was shot and killed by his wife. I took in those kids. I married a man with two daughters. I raised the stepdaughters, right? One of my stepdaughters lost her 4-year-old son drowning in a swimming pool. Hello. I mean, we can go on and we can talk about all sorts of things that people might perceive as really sad, emotionally draining, tough situations in your life. We all have tough situations, but we're at choice. We're at choice. We're at choice. And that's what we need to recognize. So we recognize that, then we can all of a sudden step into choosing our beingness. We can choose all the characteristics we choose to be: joyful, glad, happiness, exhilarant, you know, in control. That's another big thing. When you're at choice, who's in control? You're in control. Yeah. Not the world around you. You're in control. It's great. So be a choice. Be. Choose the be first. And Harvey, in the book, he used an example of a friend that he had. He said his friend who was planning on being on TV to promote his business, and he called up Harvey, and they both got together, and they talked all about, you know, how he was going to do it, and gave him all this advice. So a couple weeks later, Harvey called to see how it went. And he had not even made any phone calls yet. And Harvey was like, the guy was scared. He had a lack of courage. What if they don't like me? What if I'm rejected? Does that sound familiar to some of you? Right? We freeze out of fear, out of lack of courage. We freeze. We don't go out there and share because we don't have the courage. We're fearful of somebody might say no. Are you kidding me? The world's full of negative people. And this guy knew exactly what to do. He knew what to do, and he knew what he wanted to have. So he had the do and the have back. But what didn't he have? He didn't have the courage and commitment to just do it. So when you're lacking that beingness, it'll freeze you. You'll be frozen. So, and the answers to that is only in one place, and that's inside each and every one of us. It's inside each and every one of us. So the inner game of success. Harvey would teach people all his steps to success after he achieved a lot. He would come to some great awakening and go out there and achieve a bunch of stuff. And then he'd teach, train people in step one, step two, step three, and blah, 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 blah. And then others, he'd give them all this knowledge and they wouldn't accomplish it. And he would say, well, what's the difference? I gave you all the steps. You had all the tools, all the how-tos, same knowledge, same instruction, very much like what we do in our industry ourselves and our business that we have. The problem was there, as he put it in the book, there was a leak in the toolbox. Something was missing. And that missing person was back to the beingness again. Work on you first. As if the strength is not in you, it will never spring forth in your business. So the strength needs to work on your inner self. Your inner self, your inner world creates your outer world. You cannot find true happiness and inner peace in the outer world until it originates within you. Big aha. So work on that. Make that be your focal point on choosing beingness, choosing it. Silencing your mental chatter. This is huge as well because we have the voices in our head. And I think, you know, when I give you the assignment at the end of this book review, you're going to really get this. But, you know, we have a lot of mental chatter. We have a lot of voices in our head. And these things come from our subconscious. They're fed up and into our conscious all the time. You can't do that. You're not good enough, blah, blah, blah. When things come, you know, you come up and you go, I'm going to go do that. Oh, no, no, you're going to screw it up. They're going to say no, blah, blah. We have all this mental chatter. It's crazy. And he said, try this exercise. So I'm just going to ask you guys to try this exercise. I'm just going to tell you about it. Okay, you're assigned 4 minutes. Okay, we're going to give you 4 minutes to prepare a 3-minute talk. You're going to give up to 200 people. So have the picture, visualize 200 people. I'm going to give a 3-minute talk. And you have 4 minutes right now, starting right this moment, 4 minutes to put together that talk on the importance of honesty. Okay, I'm really not forcing you to do this, but I just, if somebody gave you that assignment like I just did, what was your response to it? You see, this exercise is not about the talk. It's about what chatter went on in your head when I told you to do this 4-minute, I mean, take 4 minutes to do a 3-minute talk on the importance of honesty. I mean, 101 things can come to our head. We're put on the spot immediately, so we feel uncomfortable, perhaps. We think, I can't get up in front of people. Others don't know where I'm coming from. They will think I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not good at giving speeches. How can I do it 100% truthfully? What will people think about me? This is all the kind of chatter that some of you may have just felt in the moment I asked you to do that. What kind of chatter came up in your head in that moment? What kind of chatter did you hear? Now, the big question is, did your mind chatter help you write the speech, or was it mostly negative? Truthfully. Who is this non-supportive entity that's screaming in your head? It's obviously you, because there's no one else in your head. So, but who's the one that's listening to it, right? There's that voice in your head and you're listening to it and you're starting to suck it up and believe it, and it robs from you every day, every moment. Because most of you didn't respond when I told you to do that 3-minute talk on the importance of honesty. You didn't respond like perhaps some of us might respond. I know me, I love to do presentations and talks and trainings. You know that because some of you have been listening to me on these Monday morning calls for over 20 years now. But the idea is that any chance and opportunity I have to help support people shift in their lives and lead better and higher value lives and make more contribution, I'm all in. So to be able to talk on the topic of the importance of honesty, I'm all in. I started, my head started spinning going, oh my gosh, I'm gonna go into scripture and I'm gonna go into, and I just had 101 places where I was gonna go to take, you know, information out of my brain to put it down on paper up, you know. The integrity is like where it lists in the top in terms of core values, you know, all that kind of stuff. I was ready to go. But most of us don't respond that way because we have all this chatter going on, this negative self-talk. And who is the non-supportive entity screaming in your head? It is you. That's you, because there is nothing else in your head but you. It's just another voice that you're listening to because it's been fed over the years for 101, you know, different events or actions in your life, and something telling you, it could be from childhood, you're not good enough, and that you could be dragging that forward. All this chatter goes on. We got to know how to quash that mental chatter, right? And he defines it, next he talks about the false self versus true self, because the true self is the higher self, the original self that came into the world. The false self is basically the person you learn to become. In other words, all the events in your life and everything that's happened to you created this false self. It's not the person that came into the world. You just created this based on experiences you had, and you created something. We come in, because when we come into this world, we're open, spontaneous, accepting, peaceful, joyous. Of course, you could say a crying baby's not very peaceful. And then we begin, because the baby hasn't learned yet, then we begin the learning process of how to live and survive. We learn by personal experiences. A baby learns to lie about issues to get attention because it worked the first time. You get it? When the baby cries, mom and dad come tearing in there. They do everything under the sun to comfort that baby, gets all that attention. And guess what? The baby gets a feedback mechanism going. It's a feedback arc. If I do this, guess what? I know the response I'm going to get. So it starts lying to you. So we're taught how to lie at early, early stages, right? Exactly. It becomes a blueprint. And some of us carry that on still 30 years later. Really? Our personality is developed, and it's our false self that comes out. Simply an idea that we made up when we were very little and didn't know any better, and we create this false self. We create this false response. We create attention getting, or if I do this, I know I'm going to get that. We have these rationalizations that go on, and we create all this kind of false self that we have instead of our true self, which is what? Open, spontaneous, accepting, peaceful, joyous. That's how we came into this earth. But what did we create for ourselves? So we have to start looking at undoing some of that childhood conditioning that happened to us. And, you know, people get conditioned even post-childhood, but we're really going to focus on that. That's what Harvey Eckert did in his book. He says, our personality is based on our need to survive. Let's get that straight. We all come into this world, and the first thing we have is an instinct of survival. It doesn't have, you know, does it really have anything to do with thriving and being successful? No. When you have a survival instinct, it's the most base instinct you could have. It's just, how do I get enough food to survive this day? It's nothing about how do I, you know, become successful and be able to financially support 2,500 other people and build a charitable foundation. And that's not survival. Survival is, how much money do I need today to get by? Just get by. And most of survival is based on conclusions and assumptions, typically that we made as a child. It's in childhood. In fact, Harvey says that research shows 90% of who we are was picked up as a child. 90%. So you look at the programming that goes on in our childhood years, and that really basically formulates us as people. Do we have choices to get around it? Absolutely. That's what this call is about. But recognizing that we're living a false self in so much that we do is critical for us to then be able to make choices to do something different. We also got some of our conditioning from parents mainly, but also teachers, media, religion, peers, family, friends, TV, everything, every influence, every kind of dynamic around us that came into our life influences. So is our blueprint really who we are? It's automatic. It's unconscious. There's not a conscious state to it. It's just we unconsciously operate in a way that, you know, is driven by that. I know I had my experiences that way. In fact, I teach and train this when I talk about mental mindsets and mastery of your mental state. It gets into, you know, when I was a kid, I was a fourth child of four, born in 3.5 years. And I learned really quickly, probably by 2 or 3, that in order to get anything, I really needed to compete. Well, what did that turn me into? I was a tremendously competitive person. When I was growing up, I had to win at everything. I mean, I ran for office in sixth grade. They didn't even have presidents of class in sixth grade, but we had it in my class, and I won. I won all the way through junior high and high school, and I played competitive sports, and I had to win. And if you played racquetball with me, watch out, because I would sweat bullets because I had to win. And some of you know people like that in your life who are that competitive. And see, that was something that was developed as a child in my childhood based on my family, having four kids and being the youngest. And I didn't realize till I was in my 30s that that was just a choice, that I'm at choice about. I just we used to say that's who I am. And how many times do we look at characteristics we show up with that we've had for 20, 30, 40, 50 years and we go, well, that's just the way I am. No, quit accepting that. It's the way you were programmed. It's the way that event in your life changed your life at that time and you have a choice. You're at choice to move out of it. And so, finding your own true blueprint, right? Because it's what you've been developed over the years and all the influences, not who you are. It's who you think you are today and not what you operate from. But there's so much more there that you need to do some of that digging to figure that out for yourself. So the key to freedom, as Harvey puts it, is to be able to disidentify from your conditioned mind and your conditioned personality, to be able to separate yourself. This gives you choice. This is our choice that we can make every day of our life. When we see things we don't like in ourselves, instead of being dismissive and say, that's just the way I've always been, quit it. Every time that thought comes into your head, I want you to go, bingo, and write it down. Bingo, write it down. We are at choice. Not easy to see, but once you see it and once you start overcoming it and conquering it, it's incredible. Who you can choose to become. As Harvey would put it, it's the real you. Number nine, cautionary tale of the king. He talked about this story of the king. It kind of highlights it. This king, he was loved by all of his, people in his kingdom, and everybody adored him. And then all of a sudden, there's this like poison that was sent, was contamination went through the water supply. The king drank from his own well, so he didn't drink from the local water supply. All the people in his kingdom all became insane. And you know what? Soon thereafter, they disliked this king because he was a weirdo. He was crazy. See, to them, they were just normal, but they were all insane because they were all alike. But the king became an outcast. They didn't like him at all. But, oh, they had a hardship. It was all of a sudden they went from this incredible, wonderful kingdom to all of a sudden this dislike and distrust of the king because he was different. And then the king was down one day in the town and he drank out of the local water and he became insane as well from the contamination. And everybody fell in love again and they loved the king again. Is that hilarious? What does that tell you? We want people to be like us. We don't understand it when they're different, right? Fitting in with our ideas and opinions of those around us, right? When instead we only really need to tune into who our true selves are. Yeah. So that's a good analysis, a good analogy to make. Piercing the veil of the conditioned mind, we have two choices, okay? We have conditioned mind, we all know that, okay? We can recondition the mind, slowly taping over the old tapes, like I talked about earlier. I just showed you one example. I probably have a dozen of them. With few newer, more supportive beliefs and habits, right? And if you want to do some search in yourself about how you develop some of these old tapes, the other thing you can do is you can just pick out facts in your life. Go back from the history of when you were born and raised and look at different facts that came up in your life. And when you put down the facts, then in this column right next to it, put the word, title the word meaning at the top and just go through the facts. Because for me to have discovered what happened to me as a child, I said, well, the fact was I was born, here's a fact in my life. I was fourth of four children. I was the youngest. What did it mean to me? And I sat there for a long time, go, why? It just meant I was the fourth kid. It meant, what did it mean? And I had to dig, and all of a sudden I said, wow, I had to compete. That came out of just me digging about it, taking a fact in my life and started digging on it. And I came to a conclusion. And then I looked at how has that shown up in your life, and it was an abomination. But, so it's about that's kind of an exercise you can do about fact meaning to make that happen. It's another great exercise. But we really want to slowly tape over those old tapes that we have with newer, more supportive beliefs and habits reestablished, because we can toss those aside. There's always room for reconditioning. Bypass the entire fear-based, problem-based system and live from your higher or true self. That's when you'll have the most rewarding life that you can have. You can always access your true self, but only by quieting that conditioned mind. You got to shut down all those conditions that have been placed in your mind based on, again, facts, events, things that happened, beliefs that were cast upon you that really weren't yours, you weren't at choice, right? At a time in your life when we weren't at choice, because when we're little kids, we're really not much at choice, but we get conditioned. And then you can start experiencing peace, power, joy, and tap into your inner wisdom. Now, the power of the quiet mind. We have an internal intelligence, but there's also one far superior to us. And for many of us, we call that God. You know, for other people, they call it other things. So the miracles of nature tell us that is not so many other things. Think of this based on your faith or lack thereof. Some people can call it the ocean. They can call it whatever. But we know there's a higher intelligence out there. It's a higher intelligence that's always a part of you. When you start absorbing the false self, you're blocking this source of higher energy. Another sad part of us. We start crossing off the higher energy, a higher source that we have. So we want to make sure that we delete the false self, because a false self can stand in the way of our experience around that higher energy for us. So the primary reason most people are not as powerful and peaceful as they'd like to be is they're missing something or lacking that connection. They're lacking the connection. And what blocks that channel is our conditioned mind, our false self. We've allowed to buy into it so long, and that's how we view ourselves instead of saying, who truly am I? Moving toward your higher self, once we pierce the veil of that conditioned mind, we find our true self. Harvey's Zen teacher taught him, he said, if what you've been looking for was where you've been looking, you would have already found it. In other words, you're still in search, right? And when we experience, he talked about experiencing stress in our life, and stress is really a choice. And some people, oh, Mary Jo, that's not true, blah, 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 blah. And I go, well, I'm going to suggest it's true. I'm going to suggest that there might be an event that happens, a car accident, and your immediate reaction might be stress, but you can walk away from stress in about as short a time period as you went into it, because we're a choice around it. Stress is created from our mind. That's where it comes from. The vehicle collision didn't create the stress. Our mind created the stress. So when we start having more control over the mind, we'll find out that we really can release the stress as well. And we can change it today. Make a choice today. So, but it's an acknowledgement, a reality check of that. Overcoming overwhelm. It's another thing that people get into. These are traps that people fall into. Stress, overwhelm. Thoughts lead to fear, lead to actions, and actions lead to results. So, yeah, overwhelm comes from thoughts. There's not enough time. You're not going to get it done. It isn't true, blah, 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 all and all and all. Coming from where do they originate from? They fall. So they're all coming from our thoughts. So control your thinking, right, and watch what happens. Just ask, where does it come from? What must I be thinking right now? So, are we worried? Are we about fear? What are we about? Who's talking? Is it the conditioned mind? What mind is telling us that? Just stop thinking and start trusting. You're still breathing, right? You're still breathing. See, you're not your own mind. You're not. Your mind is only a part of you. And this is what's so amazing. We think our mind is who we are when our mind is just a part of us. It's just a part of us. So you make the decisions on what you want to believe. We're at choice. So when we hear and listen to our mind say things, we can stop and we can actually record it. And that's what he'll talk about later in his book. Awareness is the key to all change. All change is awareness. It has to come from awareness. You're not going to just change without some level of awareness up front. He offered up this challenge for the next 7 days. So I pass it on to you because it came right out of Harv's book, right? He says, over the next 7 days, just carry around a journal with you and observe your mind and watch your thoughts. Just record them as you're thinking. Record them. Write down. Track your most dominant thoughts as they come out. Marcus Aurelius says, the quality of your life depends on the quality of your thoughts. I believe there's a tremendous amount of truth to that. Having no thoughts is where you want to be. We call it blank slate. I teach this when I teach people how to listen to other people. It's called blank slate listening. We love to listen from judgment. I'm right, you're wrong. All the preceding events in our life tell us exactly what it has to be like. When it's just totally incorrect, we want to come from blank slate. We'll never learn anything if we come from you're right or you're wrong. We will always stay where we are. So the idea is that we want a blank slate. We want to have no thoughts is where we want to be. Tap into that higher self. Thinking can be hazardous to your health and your wealth. So tap into a place of no thinking. When you blank slate your mind, you also tap into a greater source of energy and process, right? Your mind still is a vehicle through which actions happen, but it's not in the same place. It's not all those pre-programmed thoughts and thinking that we have from our past. The next steps, acknowledge yourself. Okay, so try, I'm just giving you a challenge, 7 days. Track all your thoughts and just keep a record of all of that. And then work on what? Blanking that. Just let your mind be blank. Erase the mind. Think not. Think not. The next step is acknowledge yourself for simply observing your mind. That's an incredible thing. A lot of people have never done it in their whole life. So this is a great experience for you all to do. If you, and many of you have done this over and over, so I'm not teaching anything new here. What am I thinking? Every few moments, watch your mind in action. You're going to get some feedback as the mind will not support you as it wants to stay in its habitual way of thinking. So you're going to have to quash some of that. Get it? And you're going to release it. You're going to say, well, that's stinking thinking. Let's dismiss that. Where is that coming? And do you have to find the source of the thought? No. You can dispose of thoughts without knowing where they came from. Live your life based on joy and purpose versus fear and obligation. And his last quote in the book was, you have no idea how many of your thoughts, feelings, actions are based on some form of fear, including the two biggies, which is fear of approval and fear of control. Those are the biggies, the two biggies, approval and control. All right, people, that's it for today. I hope this set you off on a Monday with a lot of thinking to do. Of course, we're just told you to keep track, journal on those thoughts and your thinking patterns. I'd love to hear back from some of you next Monday when I'm back in town of how this experience was for you. It's a terrific experience to have. It's how to, you know, dispose of some of that negative think processing, some of the programming that's been going on in your life for years that you've just been buying into, and how do we dispose of that? And you're at choice. And some people will say, well, Mary Jo, I couldn't have it. And I said, why did you choose not to do it? You chose not to dispose, because you're at choice on how you deal with it. Your mind is just one part of you, and you have a lot more control over it than you want to accept. So it's about stepping into it and controlling it to allow you to live the most successful life you can and the most rewarding life you can. All right, everyone, have a great week. I can't wait to be back and share with you next Monday. Bye, everyone.